I'm Chastity Blackwell. I'm a site reliability engineer at Yelp, and I'm here to talk about the seven deadly sins of documentation. Oh, sweet. And it locked. All right, there we go. So, first, my employer would like me to give you a little spiel. If you don't know what Yelp is, we put people in touch with great local businesses. You probably have seen restaurant reviews and stuff, at least if you're in the States. So there you go. As far as who am I and why do I care about documentation, I came to Yelp from a much smaller, more tight-knit operations team with a much more traditional infrastructure, and Yelp is a much more complicated environment with a lot of containers and service-oriented architecture and custom frameworks and an operations team that bridges the Atlantic. So it's a very different environment, and it was very hard to get spun up in that. Documentation is one of the primary ways to do that. I've also got a writing background. My college degrees are in creative writing and history. And I've done some freelance writing for games, most notably EVE Online, which I'm happy to talk about, sort of. So just to start off, I've got a question. Raise your hand if you think you have good documentation. Okay, well, that's about what I expected. You're certainly not alone if you don't think your docs are that great. GitHub's 2017 open source survey said 93% of open source projects think their documentation is insufficient. So that's not great. But why do we need good documentation? Like I said before, one of the big reasons is onboarding. New team members can get sped up more quickly, and they build independence and confidence. Institutional knowledge, so that's reducing your bus factor, preventing the loss of important details and context when people leave your organization. Incident response, this is really important when you get woke up at 3 a.m. and you're probably not in the best state of mind to be messing with things that could cost your company millions of dollars if you screw it up. Inclusiveness. GitHub mentions this in regard to open source, that better docs make it easier to contribute. But for organizations, documents provide a way to state your values, to promote your culture, and encourage involvement. It shows you value bringing new people into your organization. And the most overlooked value of documentation is that it's self-perpetuating. Good docs encourage people to use documentation and write their own to a high standard. Bad documentation degrades trust in them and discourages writing them because nobody is using them. But if all that's true, why don't we have good documentation? And what's wrong with the documentation we do have? And what does it say about us if we're neglecting documentation to the extent that nobody in this room really thinks they've got great docs, or very few? So tell me if any of these sound, well, don't tell me, but see if these sound familiar to you. You've got a document that explains everything about a service, and you're sure the info you need to solve the incident is in there somewhere, but you can't find it. You ask about something, and someone else in the group tells you, well, you can try looking for that in the wiki, or maybe it's in the Google Docs repo, and I've got some notes in my home directory, and I think there was an email about that, or you can try looking for these tickets, and it's just on and on. You search the wiki, and you find three separate docs on how this service works, and two of them contradict each other entirely, and none of them have been updated in the last year. You've got a 500-line Puppet manifest to handle this service with no comments or comments that reference tickets from two ticketing systems ago. The new person on the team spends the first month asking what bits of internal jargon mean. You've got a bunch of archived presentations that discuss all sorts of infrastructure components, but you have no idea how up-to-date they are because you haven't had time to watch them in ages. If these sound familiar, there's probably a bigger thing behind all of them, and that's deprioritization. In most cases, everything else I'm going to talk about in this talk today follows from this sin. And what do I mean by that? Documentation is seen as extra work. It's seen as something anyone can do. It doesn't require skill. Documentation is something that will happen on its own in the course of a project by magic fairies, I guess. Why don't we prioritize documentation? There's some good reasons for that. Young organizations are too busy to document things. They're building stuff. Fast-moving organizations where things change too fast to be documented. And documentation isn't necessarily the interesting part of the work for many people. Most people don't go into this industry to write. At least not write prose. So when we don't make documents a priority, what happens? We think we'll go back and document it later, but we don't, because something comes up, or we go back to document it and we look at what we did and we're like, I don't know what any of this does or how I did it. We see documentation as lesser work. It's not the same as code or designing infrastructure, so we don't hold it to the same standards. And sometimes that means documentation gets dumped on new members of a team or junior members of a team, and these people lack the context to understand why decisions were made, how things work in relation to the rest of the infrastructure, and other important things that make writing good documentation almost impossible without knowing. Things end up being cargo cultish or otherwise misleading. Worst of all, if you don't see writing as part of your job, you just won't do it enough to actually get better at it. Professional writers will tell you don't get better at writing without practice. And we certainly wouldn't expect to get better at writing code without having your code critiqued by others and, working at it. One of the best things for me as a writer was getting an editor for the first time, because despite the welts on my knuckles from having them wrapped every time I added two spaces after a period, it taught me very quickly how to write better. All of the things we do to make our code and infrastructure better just aren't done with documentation, and it languishes. How do we get out of this spiral? The only way any of this is going to change is if we recognize that documentation isn't extra work, it's necessary work. And we can't have good documentation unless we treat it like any other essential task. And what does that mean in practice? Well, documentation has to be treated as a deliverable. It needs to be included in project plans. People need to get time to complete it, and they need to be held accountable for producing it. If you say it's going to take a week to code this project and you allocate a week to it and you don't allocate any time to the documentation, you can't blame someone for not spending some extra time to actually write that documentation. You also need to have a documentation standard and a style guide. Many of us have these things for code, but when it comes to documentation, we don't have anything similar. Having a style guide makes it clear what you expect when it comes to documentation and will make everyone have an easier way to know if they're meeting the requirements for what they're supposed to produce. It also gives you a better way to figure out where to find documentation. This doesn't necessarily mean you need to make everyone read the Elements of Style or the Chicago Manual of Style, but providing some references for proper language and grammar isn't a bad idea. Some of us have let that slip. Pardon me. When you're writing the style guide, you should call out common mistakes when writing docs, like using passive voice, overuse of ambiguous modifiers like pretty or most or good. Don't make your documents too long, because if your documents are more than two or three screens long, it's hard for somebody to read and understand that whole document, you know, without sitting there and processing it for hours, which you don't want to have to do. You can break that stuff up into more manageable chunks. And an element of any style guide should probably be notes on accessibility, like all graphics should have alt text, for instance. If documentation is deliverable and we need to treat it like one, that means having a review process to make sure they actually accomplish the goals we set for them. In contrast to what I said about new and junior members probably not being the best people to write docs, they're a great source of people to read docs and review them to ensure that they actually communicate what you intend. They don't come in with as many assumptions. They don't inherently know that you don't. They won't know things that you might assume someone knows when they just come in and read the docs. So they're a good source for that. But most importantly, everyone needs to be writing documentation. It can't just be one person's job. They can't possibly understand the details or context of every system you need to document. It's unfair to give them all the work. Sharing the burden will give everyone practice writing and make it clear that providing good docs is a cultural value for your organization. So let's talk about the other six sins. These are all symptoms of not making our documentation a priority in general. So let's start with burying the lead, or the master of none. So I actually heard this come up in another talk earlier. But what's that mean? Different situations call for different types of documentation. And in operations, we have two major types of docs, which I've split into runbooks and technical documentation. When we're in the middle of an incident, we need runbooks that tell us how to address immediate problems and get things back up and running right away. But when we're trying to understand our infrastructure, we need a document that thoroughly describes how it works and what it interacts with so that we can build a mental model of that service. Unfortunately, it's a common problem that we have either one or the other, or we have one document that tries to do both and ends up doing neither. To put it in a more concrete way, you wouldn't start telling someone how to fix a tire by starting about describing a car, you know, manufacturing process, but you wouldn't describe how to build a car by telling somebody how to fix a tire, change a fan belt, replace a tail light, change the oil. So they're two different tasks that you need both, but they shouldn't be in the same place. So when you're writing runbooks, here's what you want to make sure you do. Answer specific questions about how to know what's wrong and what to do about it. If these are just push this button, then you should probably automate it. But sometimes there's a little more to it, so make sure you got a runbook that describes that. Link to these answers from alerts so that they're easy to find when you get paged at 3 in the morning. And make them simple and straightforward so that people can at least start looking at the problem without, you know, having to go deeper into documentation. Use the inverted pyramid format when you're writing them. In journalism, this is, you'll see it in pretty much every article in like a newspaper. The most relevant details are at the top of the article, and then it sort of filters down. A good table of contents can sometimes mitigate this if you don't want to go with that, but that's not a great solution. It's a crutch. So put the most important or most common questions at the top of your runbook, and then go down further. Make sure any example commands you have in your runbook are benign. Tanya Riley had a really good example of this last year in her talk. But there was a runbook that told you how to delete a user, and it used the CEO's username as an example. And then someone ran it, and it worked. So don't do that. You can give an explanation about why these steps work, but in a runbook, you want to keep this very short. It should only be a sentence or two. For a more thorough explanation, you should link to a technical document, a design doc, or something like that that will describe in more detail what's actually going on. The other thing I'll say is, when you review the runbook, make sure you actually try the steps given in it. You might want to go back and do this on a more frequent basis just to make sure. But you don't want to find out in the middle of an incident that the command in the runbook doesn't actually work or that it deletes the CEO's username. One of my favorite public runbooks is Katie Seiler-Miller's Oh Shit, Git, which is great if you are not a Git master, which I'm not sure anybody is. It lays out a number of specific problems you might have with Git and gives you the commands on how to fix them. Each one has a short explanation of what it does and why you might want to use it, but no giant explanation of Git internals. And the questions are laid out in a conscious order. The most common situation, roll back what I just did, is first, and the last resort, which is nuke it from orbit, is last. So that's a really good example, and you can style your documentation the same way. You'll notice, you know, it's very well laid out, the question is very prominent, and there's code that tells you exactly what to run there. Technical documentation, things like specs or guides or references, there's some other things to keep in mind. Make sure you provide context for why things are the way they are. Not just how this works, but why did you make it work this way? This context is easily lost if it's not written down, and it's critical to understanding how things are supposed to work. Make sure to provide concrete examples for how things function. Just recently, I wrote a guide on how we have a new load balancer we're developing, and I wrote a guide on how the dynamic load balancing works with certain loads. And I used specific numbers, so it was very easy for someone to figure out, okay, how did you get from step one to step two? And here's how it does that. Know who you're writing for. That's especially the case with these kinds of docs. A high-level overview shouldn't assume a lot of specific previous knowledge. It'll probably be one of the first docs your new team members use to learn the basics of that system. But if it's something that's intentionally made for people who are advanced users of something, then you can be a little more, you can assume some more knowledge. Don't rely on auto-generated documentation. It's rarely well formatted for human consumption. It's probably okay for references, especially like API reference, but you don't want to depend on it. And when you're writing docs, make sure you don't send people down a rabbit hole. If you need to link to other documentation, you can do it, but in general, it's best to provide a short summary of what you want to link from the other doc into the relevant passage so that people don't end up clicking down links and end up think they're stuck in a TV tropes hole. Also, when you have someone review your documentation, have them tell you what it said. Not what they thought it said, what it said. Because if what they took away from it was different from what you thought you wrote, then you need to rewrite your docs to make sure your intent is more clear. So now we'll move on to repository overload. So what is that? That's if you've got your docs in a wiki and a Google Doc and a Git repo and text files in your home directory, you're probably suffering from repository overload. If you have all these different repos, how does someone know where to find any of the documentation they're looking for, or where to put the documentation they want to write? People will have a tendency to just put docs anywhere they feel like it, and that makes the problem worse. Incidents will last longer because people spend more time looking for what they need instead of fixing the problem, and subject matter experts will have to get rousted from bed more often, and that contributes to burnout and making overwork for everybody a bigger danger. The worst documentation is documentation no one can find. So in order to sort this out, you want as few documentation repositories as possible. One or two is optimal. If you do have more than one, you should make sure the purpose of each repository is well understood. It should be in that style guide. For instance, at Yelp, we keep most of our general documentation in a wiki and most of our runbooks in Google Docs, where you'll hopefully be able to get to them during an outage. If you need duplicate docs, this should be done in an automated way because editing in multiple places is going to end up causing drift and confusion. If you want, archive your docs and put them somewhere, and then they're there if you need to get them later. Whatever documentation repository you're using needs to be searchable and track your changes at a bare minimum. You need that history to know how they changed, and you need to be searchable so people can find things. Sometimes, though, searching it or making it searchable isn't enough. They should be discoverable. Google Docs, in my experience, are not great at this. You have to know what you're looking for, especially if you're searching for a more general term, because you'll end up getting 20,000 things, and you'll still have to pick which one is actually the thing you're looking for. To help with this, consider making a portal that gives people an entry point for broad categories of information. We've got an operations homepage, and it's just got links to a bunch of things, general use documentation for external users from operations. This gives them a way to get into that documentation and browse for what they're looking for. And as a special note, email, chat logs, and tickets are not good primary sources of documentation. They're ephemeral, and they're hard for people coming in after the fact to find, even if they're archived. They're great for they're okay for notifying people and pointing them to actual documentation, but they're not good repositories in and of themselves. So next, we have documentation overgrowth. So when we neglect the curation duties for our documentation repositories, this is what we get. How do you get it? The same way you get regular overgrowth, nobody is tending the garden. No one goes back to update documentation, so we get drift. The map gets even further from the territory, and no one trusts that the documentation actually describes anything closely approximating reality. Sometimes we'll update our docs, but keep the old ones around just in case. This can lead to confusion and it clutters searches. Even if old docs are marked obsolete, you'll end up having to jump through extra hoops just to find that right information. You'll end up clicking on this link. Oh, it's another obsolete doc. And finally, you'll get to the right one. And again, new or junior team members get bitten by this the most because they tend to be the ones who are most dependent on your documentation. But everyone's going to fall into this trap, especially at 3 a.m. So to trim that back, how do we fight that? The best thing you can do to make sure that this doesn't become the best thing you can do to make sure this doesn't become an issue is to make your documentation a priority. Make sure delivering documentation is a specific goal of your projects, not just something you hope gets done. When we're doing that, don't keep your old, outdated docs around. If you need to go back and find something, that's why we have a change history. If you really want to keep your old docs around, pull them out of the repo and put them in an archive. Your new docs should have all the relevant information from those old docs anyway, But if you're going to archive them, make sure they don't clutter searches. So pulling them out and throwing them in a PDF in S3 or something like that is a one way you can do that. But really, the best way to keep your docs up to date is to use and update them regularly. If you make it easy to find and easy to update your documentation, people are more likely to do it, and the better your documentation will be. And that creates that virtuous circle. This is one reason why I think WYSIWYG editors tend to be a little better, because there's a low barrier to do that. But if you're really into the like Git workflow and you want to make them all markup, okay, whatever works for you, as long as it's easy for people to do it. And if you, because if you're not updating your docs, you won't know what to update. And if you're not updating, people will be less likely to use them. I'd also say resist the temptation to designate like a documentation week where we're going to go back and update all our documentation. This doesn't necessarily happen because something will come up that week. But also, like, your docs are out of date until you actually go and do that. So update them as soon as you can if they're out of date. That makes sure they stay as close to reality as possible. So the next thing I want to talk about is comment neglect, which is a bit of a pet peeve of mine because I'm not the world's strongest programmer. So you probably heard the code is the documentation before. And within reason, there's some merit to this in that you should make sure your code is as straightforward and obvious in its intent as you can without putting in comments. Using obvious variable names, laying them out in such a way that they're easy to read. But the problem is knowing what the code is doing is very different from knowing why it's doing that. You still need to add comments to your code, even if your code is very easy to read. Reading code without context is difficult. When you come back to your code 6 months or a year later, or somebody else who comes to it fresh won't know that context, or won't remember that context. You want to make sure they understand your decisions and what pitfalls lurk ahead before they start adding their new features or trying to fix what they see as bugs and what may not be. We can get too close to our code and lose perspective. If you've been focused on something for weeks, it's going to seem very intuitive to you. But somebody else without that immersion is not going to feel the same way, necessarily. It's one of the reasons why writers rarely proofread their own stuff, or at least rely on that proofreading. It's another reason why an editor is great. And not everyone is as fluent in your language as you are. At Yelp, we mostly use Python, but Puppet uses a variant of Ruby. We have Golang code for our Terraform modules. I'm sure there's some other stuff in there, plenty of Bash anyway. That's a lot of bases to cover, and it's not always obvious how parts of your Terraform code stitch together. So using comments can make it more obvious how all these things tie together. So here are some examples of some good comments, at least I think so. Note that you don't necessarily need to explain everything in the actual comment. You can use it to reference other documentation, but make sure that documentation follows the other principles we've talked about already. Don't reference tickets or chat logs. You can, you know, like, so here we go. We got see this page for context on why we use this method, and it's got a link to your wiki. Optimally, we'd hit the API, but we got throttled last time we did that, so we look at the cached results instead. So that's telling somebody this is why we chose to look at the cache instead of trying to get something that was more up to date. Or this configuration file sets up the regional endpoint for US West. See this other Terraform file for how it ties into the overall config and waiting. So those help you understand how this file relates to others. So basically, good comments are all about providing context. And when we're documenting outside the code, we want to make sure that's clear too. Make sure your code is understandable and clear about what it's doing and why. Keep in mind that if you document a how in the comments and the code changes, this can get out of sync, so be careful about relying too much on comments to tell that part. You don't want your comment to say, this is how this works, and it not to match what actually happens. Put in, how did you decide to do something? Make sure this is laid out in the comments or the accompanying documentation. To reiterate what I said about technical documents, provide concrete examples for how things are supposed to behave so that people can build mental models or tell when things are not behaving. And like with other documentation, have people with less familiarity review your code. Can they understand what it's doing and why? So next up, we have jargon overuse, which I think can be overlooked as a problem. It's only natural for small groups to develop jargon as shorthand. If that can be the name of services or an in-jokey name for something. At Yelp, we call all our incidents DARS because the ticket type is short for Darwin, which was the name of the founder's dog, whose picture showed up on the website when we were down, evidently who also caused a Darwin by chewing through an Ethernet cable. This kind of stuff can be great at building team cohesion and building a shared culture, but as your organization grows, it can start to be a problem. Every time you bring a new person on, they need to learn all these new terms, and that cultural shorthand, which was great at pulling folks together before, now it becomes a barrier between the in-group and the out-group. That might not be a problem if you're small. Maybe they'll start feeling, you know, included really quickly. But after years of building that up, you can really start to make that wall higher and higher. It's an impediment to just learning the system because it's not immediately obvious what the various parts are of the system with, if they're all given a cutesy name that has no inherent meaning without that knowledge. For those of us who tend to suffer from imposter syndrome, especially underrepresented minorities, this jargon can make that even worse. It's hard to know what's something you should know and what is specific to this new organization you're walking into, and it's not always easy to just ask, especially if you're just starting out in your job. Doing that makes you feel really vulnerable, and that's very hard to do. It makes that in-group and out-group dichotomy even worse. So how do we fight back against that? The obvious answer is just avoid using jargon in the first place. If there's a name for something that isn't a bit of jargon, use that. Like for us, don't use DAR when incident will work just fine in your docs. When you're naming service components, make the name something obvious that tells you what it does instead of something that sounds cool. If you need to use shorthand or acronyms, make sure the first time you use it, you define what it is. And like I've mentioned before, keep your audience in mind. Sometimes you might need to provide more basic information in your docs than you usually would. If the audience is new people or people outside your team, this is another case where exact command lines and good examples can give some extra context. They'll make it easier for people to understand what that jargon means when they're reading it. I also hate to put this in here because it's kind of just giving up. But yeah, a glossary with all those terms is probably useful, but don't use it as a crutch. It needs to include enough context and links to other documentation that people can feel confident that they fully understand what they're talking about, not just they have some vague idea of what a foozle is. And above all else, I think make sure you have an inclusive environment where people feel like they can ask those stupid questions. That'll help break down that barrier between the in-group and the out-group. But that's really easier said than done. I'm pretty sure creating that kind of environment is probably worth a whole talk, if not a whole conference. So don't count on this. Don't count on this being something that everyone feels like they can do. And the last thing I want to talk about is video addiction, which I think is probably the least common of these. But it's also one of those things you think might save you, and it doesn't actually do that. So everybody's pivoting to video these days, and there may be a temptation to think it's the solution to your documentation issues. You can just record that presentation you did on your new infrastructure, and now you can use that to teach everybody about your new system. There may be some merit to that. There's evidence that video is more engaging than text, although it mostly comes from people trying to sell you video ads. But partly, it just demands more of your attention, so that's going to help retention anyway. Sometimes it's easier to present and explain complex topics in a video rather than a flat text document. And all that also means you're more likely to remember that video later than you would a text document. But unfortunately, video has a few problems when it comes to documentation. The biggest problem with relying on video, and to a lesser extent other graphics, is that they can't easily be searched like text can. And as we discussed earlier, making your doc searchable is kind of an important part of having anything in a repository. You don't want to have to watch a half-hour video to find the 30-second clip that has the information you actually need. Consequently, you probably also watch the video less frequently, and you lose track of which ones might be out of date. Videos aren't as easy to update as text. You've either got to dive in with film editing skills, which I think fewer of us have than writing skills, and it can also end up making your video less intelligible if there's an awkward cut, or you'll need to re-record the entire thing. Or what tends to happen most of the time, nothing will happen, and you'll have this half-right, half-outdated video lying around as a trap for someone later. That's not a great situation. In general, videos aren't great for accessibility either. Some people do learn easier from them, like people with dyslexia. I can usually get more out of videos than text. But video and graphics don't work well for people who need to use screen readers, and videos need to have subtitles for hearing-impaired folks. So if you've ever watched the auto-generated captions for YouTube, you'll know that's not a panacea either. So you'll probably need to write that down in a text format anyway. So if you are going to use video, don't make it your primary documentation method, to say the least. It's an okay supplement, and it's good for some things, generally those that need to be viewed in their entirety and are updated infrequently. This can be stuff like general onboarding or overviews of your infrastructure. As long as you realize you're committing to putting in the effort to keep those up to date. If you don't have time to go back and edit those movies or re-record them, then don't get started down that path. If you're using graphics, make sure they always have descriptive alt text. And avoid cramming a document with too many pictures. This is kind of related to the don't make your documents too long. If your document is 20 screens long because it's full of screenshots, yes, it's probably easy to follow the screenshots, but it's going to be hard to read that document. Use graphics when they're useful, but don't use them more than that. If you are going to make videos, give timestamps on the videos so that people can find a topic that they're looking for, and be sure to provide accurate subtitles. If you're going to do that, you can also just provide a transcript. And that'll make it really easy for people to search for the bits of information in that they need. So to sum all this up, how can we make sure we're not falling prey to the 7 deadly sins of documentation? Have runbooks and in-depth technical docs, and don't try to do both in the same place. Store your docs in one or two repositories that keep a history, are easily searchable, and easily updated. Update them frequently and don't clutter the repo with old docs. Provide plenty of context in your code comments. Avoid jargon where you can and define it where you don't or where you can't. And be wary of overusing video and graphics. But most importantly, remember that documentation isn't extra work, it's necessary work. You need to prioritize having good docs as much as you prioritize having good code or a resilient infrastructure, And that means it needs to be treated just like you treat that code. Make sure that everyone sees it as their job, make sure you're reviewing it, and treat it like a deliverable. Without that, you're going to have a hard time getting the rest of this done. Just like everybody else, Yelp is hiring. I'm happy to talk about it. Here's our social media stuff. And I have references for where I got my inspiration and some of my useful stuff and later. So I'll take questions, I guess. I've got 4 minutes.
So please do feel free to ask questions, but if you can come up to the mic when you want to ask them, that would be great.
Or my talk was perfect, and no one has any questions.
All right, well, one more round of applause then. I'm sorry, did I see a question start? Yeah,
yep.
Come on up.
Okay, second. Oh, well.
Yeah, sorry. I was curious, could you talk a little bit about the distinction between searchable and discoverable?
So searchable means you need to have a way to go through and say, I'm looking for something on the internet, and it will find every instance of the internet in something. But discoverable is like, I don't really know exactly what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something on configuration management, maybe, but I'm not sure, or maybe I don't have enough experience or context with it that I even know what to search for. So, like, I'll go to a portal. Like our operations portal at Yelp has stuff like, here's the introduction to Puppet. Here's how we do Terraform. Maybe, and then there's some more specific stuff like, hey, you want to move to a new dev box. So it's a place that people can go when they're not sure, when they have a question and they're not sure where to look for it, because as much as I talk about this, we are still prey to the same legacy stuff. So we will have stuff in Google Docs or in a wiki, and you might not necessarily know where that is. So this is a way to make it easier for people to find that if they don't know exactly what to search for. And sometimes searching isn't great. Like if you search for Terraform in our Google Docs repo, it's going to give you like 27,000 things, which all of them have Terraform in them, but not all of them are what you're looking for. So that's the difference.